The air in the executive suite always smelled like expensive ozone and filtered silence, but today it felt like a vacuum sucking the oxygen right out of my lungs. Marcus didn't look up from his Bloomberg terminal when I walked in, his thumb tracing the edge of a crystal paperweight as if he were measuring the density of my defiance. He told me to sit down without looking at me, his voice a low, melodic vibration that usually made my pulse skip for all the wrong reasons. But today it just felt like a tether tightening around my throat. I stared at the Celine bag sitting on the corner of my desk earlier that morning, a sleek, buttery leather weight that had arrived with no card, no ribbon, just a silent confirmation of ownership. It wasn't a gift anymore. It was a down payment on a debt I never agreed to owe. And the way he finally looked at me, his blue eyes cold and transactional, told me the interest was due. I remember the first time the boundary blurred, a late-night strategy session over a merger that was bleeding cash and reputation. He hadn't touched me, hadn't even complimented my dress. But he'd looked at my red-lined projections and told me I was the only person in the building who understood the actual language of risk. He called me his secret weapon, his high-yield asset. And then he'd authorized a 30% discretionary bonus that bypassed HR's standard oversight. I told myself it was merit, a recognition of my 80-hour weeks and the way I could forecast market volatility before the algorithms even blinked. But the first Cartier box changed the math. It appeared in my locked drawer after the Q3 earnings call, a delicate gold band that felt like a shackle the moment I slipped it on. He never mentioned it in the hallway, never winked during board meetings, but he started CCing me on private equity deals that were way above my pay grade, pulling me into a gilded inner circle where the rules of the employee handbook didn't seem to apply. The psychological shift was surgical, a slow-motion gaslighting that made me feel like I was his partner in a secret empire rather than a director of finance with a mortgage and a reputation to protect. He'd talk about his wife in the same breath he'd discuss our shared future at the firm, describing her as a legacy cost, a fixed liability he couldn't liquidate without destroying the firm's public image. It made me feel essential, the hidden variable that kept his life balanced, until the expectations started arriving with that practiced, predatory smile. He didn't want a mistress. He wanted a curated extension of his own power, someone he could mold and deploy. When he started asking me to adjust the travel expenses for his personal retreats, masking them as business development for shell companies I'd never heard of, the adrenaline of being the favorite curdled into the cold sweat of a co-conspirator, I tried to draw the line at the Hampton Summit, which turned out to be just the two of us in a glass-walled fortress overlooking a gray, churning Atlantic. I told him I couldn't be the person who fixed his books and his loneliness at the same time, my voice shaking as I laid the Cartier ring on the mahogany kitchen island. He didn't get angry. Which was worse, he just laughed, a dry, hollow sound that echoed off the minimalist decor and told me that I was being emotional about a simple diversification of interests. He reminded me, with a terrifyingly calm precision, that every single gift had been logged in the system as a performance-based incentive that I had personally signed for. He'd made sure the paper trail didn't lead to his obsession. It led to my greed. The exit strategy. I'd spent weeks crafting the offer from the rival firm, the clean break, the NDA, disintegrated the moment I walked into his office this morning to hand in my resignation. He didn't even open the envelope. Instead, he turned his screen around to show me a series of internal Slack messages, expertly fabricated or perhaps just cleverly edited, where I appeared to be the one initiating the late-night flirtations, the one asking for the bags, the one begging for the private investments in my career. My heart hammered against my ribs like a trapped bird, the staccato rhythm of panic making my vision blur at the edges. I told him this was illegal, that I had witnesses to my work ethic, but he just leaned back, his tailored suit jacket straining slightly at the shoulders, and told me that in this industry, the person with the most capital decides what's true. He'd already sent a blind memo to the board about a potential embezzlement investigation involving the very accounts he'd had me manage, framing it as a tragic lapse in judgment by a talented but overambitious junior executive. The trap was so perfectly calibrated it was almost beautiful. If I left, he would trigger the audit, using the gifts and the forged messages as proof that I'd traded my integrity for a designer wardrobe and a shot at the C-suite. If I stayed, I was his forever. A ghostwriter for his financial crimes, and a silent fixture in his bed whenever his legacy costs became too heavy to bear. The office felt smaller now, the floor-to-ceiling windows offering a view of a city that suddenly felt like a grid of cages. I thought about the way the other women in the office looked at me. The favorite, with a mix of envy and suspicion, never knowing that my privilege was actually a slow-motion execution. He stood up then, walking around the desk with a predator's grace, and rested a hand on my shoulder. The weight of it was unbearable. He told me he'd booked a flight to Zurich for business, and that he expected me to be on it, because he couldn't imagine navigating the complexities of the Swiss markets without his most trusted advisor. His breath smelled like expensive espresso, and the metallic tang of a threat. And as he squeezed my shoulder, I realized I hadn't just lost my job, I'd lost the version of myself that believed I could outsmart a man who owned the board. The silence in the room was a living thing, heavy and suffocating. I looked at the resignation letter on the desk, a useless piece of paper in a game where the rules were written in invisible ink. He told me to go home, pack something appropriate for the Alps, and forget about this little outburst of independence. He called it a temporary volatility in our partnership. As I walked out of the suite, my heels clicking a frantic hollow rhythm on the marble, I saw the HR director coming out of the elevator. She gave me a tight, knowing smile. The kind you give someone you think is sleeping her way to the top. And for a second, I wanted to scream the truth until the glass shattered. But I saw Marcus watching me through his open door, his face a mask of professional concern. And I knew that if I spoke, he'd make sure the world heard a different story. I reached my desk and saw the Celine bag again. It looked like a tombstone. I realized then that he hadn't just invested in me. He'd shorted my entire life. He'd made it so that the only way I could survive was to become the monster he'd framed me to be. I opened my laptop, my fingers trembling as I looked at the travel itinerary he'd already pushed to my calendar. There was a file attached, a list of offshore accounts that needed rebalancing. It was a test, or a final tether, or perhaps just the first page of my new life as a professional shadow. The sound of a new Slack notification hit me like a physical blow. It was from him. "Don't be late. The car is downstairs." I looked at the bag, then at the elevator, then back at the blinking cursor on my screen. I wasn't just his favorite anymore. I was his collateral. And as the elevator doors slid open, revealing the polished, empty interior of my future, I realized the most terrifying part wasn't that he'd trapped me. It was that I was starting to wonder if, after everything he'd done to my reputation, I had anywhere else to go. The point of no return wasn't a cliff I'd jumped off. It was a room I'd walked into and allowed the door to be locked behind me, because I liked the view. Now the sun was setting. The view was gone. And I was alone in the dark with a man who knew exactly how much I was worth, and exactly how to break me down into parts.